Girls Season 4 and Broad City Season 2 are still going strong, and we are just getting started here at Post Show Recaps. Hey everyone, Mike Bloom here with a bit of a different style of programming here on Post Show Recaps for today. We will be covering not one but two shows on this podcast. We'll be talking about the current female-centric New York-based comedies Girls and Broad City, and obviously from the way I was describing it, you can see why we kind of grouped them together. And to join me to talk about these two great shows, I brought on, of course, a great person. You may recognize her from Post Show Recap's coverage of Orange is the New Black and in general muddling about the Rob Has a Podcast atmosphere. It is Taylor Cotter. Taylor, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Mike?
I'm good. I am thrilled to be talking about this. I kind of threw the idea out into the ethos of if I knew any female podcasters who were fans of both shows, because I really feel like these shows need the female perspective on them. I feel like I would not do it justice if no offense to my male compatriots, but if myself and another male were talking about this, I feel like we would completely miss the point in general.
Well, I'll see what I can bring to the table. I may have carved out a niche for the some of the female-centric shows on post-show recaps. So
that's very true. Between this and Orange is the New Black, you definitely have a type.
Yep, I don't watch Once Upon a Time, so there was never a chance for
yet.
That one.
You don't watch yet. It yet.
Yet. So or I don't watch it anymore.
So
somewhere between those.
So for those of you that may not know who Taylor is, Taylor, do you want to give a quick little intro on yourself for any new listeners we may have to your work?
Sure. So like Mike said, I am involved in the Rob Has Podcast and Post Show Recaps community. I have been poking my head into different projects for more or less the past 4 years of RHAP, which is kind of crazy. On Post Show Recaps, Jessica Lise and I recap Orange is the New Black. And from time to time, I'll be pulled on to a few other projects here and there. And most regularly, I cover social media for Rob Has a Podcast during the Survivor season with the esteemed Mark Solera.
And what better shows to talk about social media on than these ultra hip shows about girls in their 20s, right?
Very much so. And I'm glad to bring the female part to this podcast, and you can bring the New York part, and hopefully we have the best understanding of what's going on these two shows.
Yeah, so you may be wondering to yourself kind of why both of these shows, you know, why are we decide to lump these shows together into one podcast? And I think I'm going to blame the pop culture media more than anything. I feel like, and you may agree or disagree with me, Taylor, I feel like when Broad City came about and it's really surged into popularity, it's kind of become the new thing, specifically in Comedy Central's programming, I feel like a lot of critics were saying, oh, this is like another version of Girls, or I feel like maybe it's because of the similar subject matter. There's a lot of comparisons between the two, but I think you can agree, Taylor, that these two shows do, while they may have similar material on the surface, if you dig deeper down, it is very, very dissimilar.
Yeah, the best analogy I heard for it was from a comedian here in Boston named Rachel Klein. She tweeted that Girls is to Broad City as Studio 60 is to 30 Rock.
Awesome, yeah.
Yeah, that the material is super similar. If you're just describing the shows, you would probably describe them the material in the exact same way, but on execution probably couldn't be more different.
Yeah, they're two extremely different tones, and the tones that I'm getting from each show are that Girls seems to be more of like, it honestly seems to be more of like a Seinfeld type of writing style, where it's about these people that are not necessarily the best people, and it's more about like how do these people with these personalities do in these different types of situations and the relationships they have, whereas Broad City might be more comparable to something like Louie, maybe. It's based off of a web series, which I think the style of the show definitely goes to show in terms of it's very out there. It's also very concentrated. It's nearly all the time about the two girls. They very rarely feature supporting characters, and when they do, it's in limited doses. So I feel like that comparison is so apt in terms of like 30 Rock was a little more zany and a little more, you know, colorful, whereas Studio 60 was a little more, I'll use the term serious for Studio 60. I wouldn't say Girls is necessarily more serious. I think they've covered more serious subject matter, but I wouldn't flat out say like this is like a drama.
Right. Takes itself seriously, maybe.
Yeah, definitely takes itself seriously. But it's interesting because when I put out this question into the ethos of how many people, you know, do I know any female podcasters that like girls and like Broad City? I wasn't sure what response to get because I don't know, girl, to me, from what I've been, you know, hearing amongst all my friends and all the people I know, girls has kind of, I don't know, come and gone into the popular atmosphere. It seems like a lot of people have become turned off from girls, at least in my experience. I don't know if you've undergone the same sort of experience, Taylor.
No, I agree. I think when it was first, those first two seasons, particularly the first season, it was so all over the place. Like everyone wanted to talk about it. You couldn't open, you know, any sort of popular website without 100 think pieces on girls coming up. And that, you know, we'll probably get a little bit into that, but that probably was impressive for any show. And now that we're 4 years into Girls, which is really impressive. And I think that these last four episodes of the fourth season are probably the best that the show has ever been. So it's kind of funny that I think people got so riled up about it at first and were so mad about it for whatever various reason, or really into it and then dropped off. And it's just it's had high points and low points, but I think this season has been really great.
Yeah, so let's kind of stay on that tangent of the most recent episodes, because, you know, we were planning this and I did not expect for two kind of game changing episodes of the show to air. And, you know, throughout this podcast, I think it's fair to say that Taylor and I will spoil a bunch of plot points and things that happen throughout both of these shows. So if you don't want to get spoiled, I mean, I'll say on the whole that these shows aren't really that plot centric. Girls, mm-hmm. much more so than Broad City. Broad City's Girls seems more of like a serialized thing, whereas Broad City kind of seems like almost like sketches every episode. But these two episodes were so groundbreaking in terms of the girls episode. The most recent girls episode ended with Hannah leaving her. I'm still confused as to whether it was like grad school or some sort of like intensive study program in Iowa, but she ended up leaving it, going back to New York, and basically finding out that her longtime on again off again boyfriend Adam has dumped her for Gillian Jacobs, aka Britta from yep. Community. So just gives further credit to the theory that Britta ruins everything. And Broad City, this episode had Abby going starting a romantic relationship with this guy named Jeremy, who is her neighbor from across the hall that she's been crushing on throughout the entire course of the show. And the illusion is sort of broken in more ways than one. Jeremy has some rather interesting bedroom habits, and then Abby and him end up having an argument based off of a series of unfortunate events, and they actually end up breaking things off. So I feel like with both of these shows, they've kind of built up these structures, and it just so happens that both of these episodes in the past 7 days have kind of smashed those structures to pieces.
Definitely. And I think for Girls, maybe on a much grander scale than Broad City, just because the Jeremy plot with Abby, I think, can come and go. It makes sense that like that had to have been realized, and then maybe they'll end, and there could be some lingering stuff that goes on. I'm sure there will be, but I just finished watching the most recent Girls episode, and I was kind of jaw on the floor, and just felt so much more that I don't know if connected is the right word, but emotionally invested in these characters and their happiness. So seeing Adam with Britta really threw me.
It's weird, and especially since we saw a bit of Adam in the previous episode, but other than that we saw him complain a little bit about being in a long distance relationship with Hannah, but we really got no glimpse into Adam's perspective whatsoever in the past. I don't know how much time has passed with Hannah in this program. I'm assuming a significant amount of time, but we have no idea where he's coming from. And maybe Girls will do their like first ever flashback episode, and maybe we'll get to see a little bit of Adam's side. But it seemed to come completely out of left field, which, I mean, the more you think about Adam's character, I think the more it makes sense to him. But still, it's a little crazy thinking about it.
Yeah, it really did. Especially, we did see a decent amount of Adam in the previous episode with Jessa and getting arrested, and he had and like an arc that made sense that like, oh, this is what Adam has been up to. He's been kind of hanging around Jocelyn and going to AA meetings. And the fact that he basically has a live-in girlfriend in Hannah's apartment is pretty crazy. So I am interested to see, yeah, if there's a flashback. I don't know if that they'll be as on the nose with it, because on some level, I think it's still Hannah's story. But I think Girls has done a good job of that this year, or we can argue whether it was a good job or a bad job, but they've really developed each character as an individual, and their life exists outside of the core four of them. So
let's go back to talking more about Girls as a whole. I would love to hear from you, Taylor. Mm-hmm. What do you love about these shows, Girls and Broad City? Obviously, they'll probably be different things, but I guess that's a good place to start our big conversation about these shows.
It's definitely different. I'll start with Broad City. For me, as someone that's interested in comedy, Broad City is so purely a comedy show. They're getting into hijinks. Their banter and their comments are all very funny. And it stars two girls that are definitely not perfect, but on some level, you accept them as good people. And they're just getting into a kind of wild and crazy adventures in New York City. So it's a very easy show to watch. The plots are usually funny. The side characters are really great. So I don't like Broad City. To me, I'll recommend it to anybody pretty much. I texted my mom and told her to watch it this year because I loved the Abby or Alana and her mom subplot. Mm-hmm. Girls, I have like a more complicated relationship with, and I'm sure most people do. Girls, it's almost like the worst versions of myself are then reflected on TV. And so it's a very love-hate thing to watch. And I love it in the sense that it's a great story and they really take what's somewhat mundane about life and make it very melodramatic and interesting to watch and to kind of see relationship dynamics that I've personally had and I know are more common, put that on screen, but reflecting that in a way that for myself makes me very introspective, I guess. And like in this past episode, Shoshana is complaining about how a job interview goes poorly. And I know that there are things that she says in that interview that I literally have said, and not in the interview, when she's coming home and complaining from the interview. But I'm watching her in the interview. I'm like, oh, she's so badass. Like, look how she handled that interview. So it's a much more like, this is parts of my life that maybe I am uncomfortable with, or parts of my personality that I'm uncomfortable with reflected on screen. So it's almost more of like a masochistic, interesting love of the show rather than its entertainment value, even though versus Broad City.
I'll say that the thing that I'm fascinated with and really, really love about Girls, and I don't mean this to come off as an insult at all, but it's such an unpolished show. And usually people use that term unpolished, especially when talking about the production world with movies and television, as something negative, you know, like, mm-hmm. Oh, it looks unpolished, you know, camera work's dirty, writing's not great. But like, I feel like it's just so raw, almost to the point of where, like, I mean, it was talked about a lot when Girls first started about Lena Dunham's nudity, and there's a lot of nudity in Girls if you've never seen Girls before, and the fact, you know, people, as you said, Taylor, there were a lot of think pieces about like, should she be doing this, or what does this represent? And I think the fact that like her writing is so raw, and especially her writing of Hannah, and we've seen specifically in the past couple of episodes her, like, you know, Hannah doesn't really have much of a filter, and she really speaks her mind and is willing to, you know, take people down, whether it means a classroom full of academics or her own boss at some companies. She's just very raw, and I really enjoy those elements, because I will not say that these are necessarily realistic characters on the whole. I think there are certain facets of characters that we can see in everybody, especially people from our generation. And I think that's another big thing as well, and you talked about it a little bit, Taylor, when you were talking about what you loved about the show, is that, like, I mean, these these people in both shows, I believe Abby and Alana's characters are supposed to be a little bit older than the characters on Girls. But I mean, they're all around our age. They're all in their 20s. They're mm-hmm. all in a major metropolitan area. It's interesting. Girls is a little bit more about like more focused on I don't know what to do with my life. Help. Whereas Broad City, yes, Abby wants to become an artist, but Alana just seems very complicit doing whatever, so it's a little bit less about that. But I there is a certain association with that idea, and there's a certain pathos behind it of like, oh man, well, if anything, I'm better off than these characters.
right, definitely. And I think the hard part about Girls is there's truly no one to root for. Almost not even in an anti-hero kind of sense, like you would root for like Dexter or something like that. It's just their goals are very unclear. What would fulfill them as a person is very unclear. And this was very much subverted in the last episode because I feel like we kind of did root for Hannah, and she got into graduate school and we're like, oh, okay, this makes sense. Like, this is a good thing for someone like Hannah to do. Like, she has such a hard time holding down a job. Like, she wants to be a writer. Like, great. She's going to go to this really elite writer's workshop, and like, what a great arc for her. And then almost immediately it totally falls apart. And that's very real, especially for people that have, I guess, a lack of direction like Hannah does. And Broad City, I find myself, no matter what, you're just kind of rooting for Abby and Alana, like whether they're trying to like get Lil Wayne tickets or they're trying to, you know, have these successful jobs or relationships. You want them to win. And I don't know if people want Hannah and the other girls to win.
Yes. Yeah, so let's dive into that a little bit. Let's dive a little bit into the main criticisms that people have had with Girls over the years. And I mean, I feel like a lot of these, like you said, I feel like people found a lot of fatigue with the show after season two. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you felt, but I'll be honest, I kind of binged all these episodes last summer, and season two is it's a little tough to get through. It's very, very different. And it felt a little, I don't know, I felt like the tone did deviate a little bit from season one, but it came back during season three.
I agree. I was not a very close watcher in season two. I was really casual. I would miss weeks and catch up, and then definitely got back on the wagon in season three. And on a rewatch, I felt like season two was much better, and it made sense with the context of season one and season three, but as a standalone thing was probably the weakest.
Yeah, I did like what season two attempted. One of my favorite episodes, actually, and I mean, we'll get more into the characters as we move along here, but I love that one episode in season two where it was Adam and Ray looking for the dog, just because these were like mm-hmm. two guys that really hadn't interacted before. They really hadn't been fleshed out in the first season, and I feel like Lena Dunham gave these characters a lot more to work with and a lot more room to breathe during this. And we saw substantial development on both of their parts. We saw their own storylines, which like the first season was all about like every scene had to have one of the four girls in it. You know, we never saw Adam alone. We never saw Ray alone. But then you kind of balance that out with the one episode where Hannah becomes like Patrick Wilson's sex slave for a weekend mm-hmm. and like stays in his apartment. So you have to take the good with the bad. But I do appreciate some of the things Lena Dunham tried to go for. And I mean, you can't, as Hannah learned, you can't really learn until you attempt something and fall flat on your face doing so.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like, and I'm making a huge assumption here, that Lena Dunham is constricted by 10 half-hour episodes a season. And that had she been producing this in some other sort of medium, if she had a full hour, if she had a full season, the story would read a lot differently. I don't want to say it feels rushed from time to time, because I think that is part of the aesthetic, but you don't always get to see the relationships build the way that would probably be the most fulfilling.
Yeah, that's very true. I think she may be a little... It's tough because, like, granted, she doesn't have commercials. It's HBO. So she gets to go for the full, like, 25 minutes or so. But still, that's tough, especially, you know, she's starting to juggle more and more of an ensemble now. And as we've seen, even with shows like True Blood, when they had an hour to work with it, if you're trying to juggle an ensemble and you're trying to do, like, two, three, maybe even four storylines an episode, that is... extremely tough. And I will say that, you know, I agree with you. I've been really enjoying season four thus far. I thought it was really fun how you kind of compare where this episode left us with like the end of season three, when Hannah just got into this program and Adam is on Broadway in a play and Marnie has finally found someone to make music with. Like, people were doing well, and now it seems like everything is crumbling apart, which seems like a way to like end in season, not to put it in the midpoint. But you have to appreciate the work that she's done. I'll posit another question to you right now. I think one of the major complaints that people have with this show is that they find the characters completely unlikable. They deplore these people. What I'm wondering, and we could probably talk this out, is I wonder what differentiates a crowd's reaction to a show like Girls, where the characters are unlikable, whereas opposed to like shows like Seinfeld or It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia or even like The League, where these characters are deplorable as well, but for some reason the audience is more on board. Do you think it's a matter of gender, or do you think there's something else to it? I know it's a loaded question.
Yeah, it's definitely a loaded question. I don't know if it's just gender. I would definitely think that that has something to do with it. I think a lot of people took how they, and it, I mean, I'm reflecting on think pieces that I read 4 years ago at this point, so it's hard to put everything in the exact context of what people might be thinking now. I think people had problems with Lena Dunham's success. I think they had problems with Allison Williams being cast, and found a lot of entitlement in the actual production of the show that may have translated into the how they viewed the show. So I think that's somewhat where a lot of the critics came from. I am right there with a lot of these people that you do find these characters unlikable quite a bit of the time. And I think it may be because their flaws aren't always played for laughs. If you think about, and I don't have all the context for the shows you mentioned, but I've seen enough of all of them. And Seinfeld, if someone's being a terrible person, if Jerry is breaking up with a girl because of some shallow thing, it's played for laughs. It's not played as like, oh, this is a deeply mentally ill character flaw of this person, which on Girls, I think it often is.
Mm-hmm.
And that might not always be the case. I think people have a hard time empathizing with a lot. The general public has a hard time empathizing with people who come from a place of privilege. But I guess that applies to all the shows that you mentioned.
I think you might have hit the nail on the head, though, because I think my answer to that question would definitely be the perspective. Because I feel like if you put, like, let's just say you take like a general comedy monologue and you put it down in a piece of paper and you put it in front of someone and you say, okay, this monologue was told to you by a male comedian in his 40s living in New York trying to make it in stand up. And then you put the same monologue in front of the same person. You say, this monologue was written by a 23-year-old girl who just got out of college and doesn't know what to do. And her parents have supported her whole way, and now they can't anymore. Like, it's pretty obvious that the audience is going to enjoy the former more than the latter, just because of a perspective type of thing. And maybe that's it. Maybe it's just because the perspective are from these four girls that are, they definitely come from a place of privilege. The first scene of the first episode are Hannah's parents cutting her off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that speaks volumes for what the show's about. But maybe you're right. Maybe it's just because of the fact that, like, because the perspective are like these four girls living in the city who don't know what they're doing, but they have all this money to spend, but it's so hard, but they really don't know what it's like. That can be tough to watch for some people.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. So that, I know that's the main critique. I don't know. Have you heard any other like big critiques of what people made people turn off to Girls over the course of the past few seasons?
I think one of the initial critiques was very much that there were no people of color on the show.
Mm.
And I am not super qualified to speak to that, but yeah, it seems like that's something that if you're in the year 2012 to present, something that should be top of mind when you're creating a show. I also think it's an obvious criticism for people to pull when it's available. So it it's an easy way for people to find criticism with your show. And I think that Lena Dunham has internalized that quite a bit, and because you can see direct attempts at combating that in the later seasons.
Yeah, well, even in the first season, there was that whole arc with Donald Glover. Isn't that kind of similar to that one episode of 30 Rock with Wayne Brady where like Lena was dating him, but then they found out like he was a Republican, and then, you know, she tried to break up with him and he made it about race and it really wasn't about that. Maybe I'm mixing up my shows, but I feel like there's something along the lines of that.
Yeah, very close. I don't think the issue of race came up directly in Girls, but it on 30 Rock, it was definitely Wayne Brady was thought that Liz Lemon dumped him because he was black when she dumped him because he had a bad personality. So, yeah, I guess it was very similar, actually.
Yeah.
I forgot why Lena, that she dumped him because he was a Republican.
Yeah. I think that's exactly what it was. I forgot that now there are two community cast members that have appeared on Girls.
Yep. And Donald Glover was a writer on 30 Rock.
It all connects, man.
Yep.
We're unraveling all the conspiracies that are going on in the NYC comedy world.
Yeah, this is all one big show.
Exactly. So, Taylor, who do you, I guess, staying along the Girls line, is there one of the main four girls in particular that you either associate with the most or that you love watching the most? I don't know if this is like the lesser of four evils for you, but do you have one that you can pick out?
It's very funny, and something that I think is a context for a lot of the things that we've discussed so far is Sex and the City. I don't know if you were a Sex and the City fan.
No, I was not.
But I like that was a very popular thing to pick the Sex and the City girl you were most like. And I think I just want to go back for 1 second to the people of color argument. I think that girls in every show on that level should have made an effort to have more people of color. I don't know if that was clear in my comments. So
no, yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, it definitely doesn't hurt Broad City that, I mean, aside from being hilarious, Hannibal Buress happens to be a person of color and he happens to be one of the main supporting characters. I don't know how much, you know, they've shown bits and pieces here and there, but the fact that one of their main supporting characters is a person of color, I think definitely helped Broad City's credit a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And I think in 2015, there's, you know, such an array of talent out there that there's no reason for any popular show to be pigeonholed into casting all white people. So excited for the future of diverse casting. But back to your question.
Yeah, let's. I thought you were going to try to escape for a little bit to have to talk about your favorite girls.
I need
character.
A minute to think. So when I first started watching Girls, I think I really liked Marnie. I felt like she was the one that like had everything together and was so like cool and beautiful and really was on top of everything. And she has very much devolved into maybe the least stable person on the show. I see parts of myself in all of them, but I have to give it up for Shoshana. I think she is so funny as a character, probably the character that's been consistently has had the same sort of motivation behind her throughout the whole show. And she's just like, she's just as privileged as the rest of them, but she's really just like trying to make it. And I think she's smart and she's got it together, but she unfortunately has all that inside of a shell of a person that is very young and immature. So I am a big Shoshana fan.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I would say Shoshana on the whole is the funniest. I think Lena Dunham gives her, between her delivery and the lines Lena Dunham gives her and the situations they're able to put her in because of her naivete, you know, there, I don't think any other character would be able to pull off the scene where she's in a job interview and she says like, well, I'm actually just using this as a training interview
right.
to warm up for other job interviews. I feel like only Shoshana could pull that off. I was not the biggest fan of her storyline in the third season when she was just kind of sleeping around. I like the descent into that in the first couple seasons where it was like she's a virgin and she was trying to figure out like, you know, what how to handle that. And I really liked the dynamic between her and Ray, and I'm glad that's being explored again. Not the biggest fan of the whole like her sleeping around and then her like almost failing college as a result. I feel like that was a little bit too much of a morality tale.
Yeah.
Like, look what will happen. The Scarlet Letter is on her forever. But I do really, really love her. I also enjoyed Marnie in the beginning as well, because I think, and we can kind of compare this to the character of Abby on Broad City as well. I feel like both characters kind of started off as, you know, in comedy scenes, we talk a lot about crazy man, straight man, where mm-hmm. usually in every sort of improv scene you do, there's going to be, like 70% of the time, there's going to be one person who is crazy, has this weird philosophy or has this weird tick to them. And there's one person called a straight man who has to kind of who's the normal person and has to kind of internalize things and interact with them and kind of serve as the voice of the audience. And both Marnie and Abby in the beginning of their respective shows kind of filled that role. But it's interesting as the seasons have progressed, Marnie has kind of she has definitely devolved, and I agree with you, Taylor. She's kind of become the most deplorable of all the characters just because she has become so self-centered. It is ridiculous, but I kind of love it. Whereas Abby, on the other hand, has picked up a lot of different quirks, whereas it seemed like earlier in the beginning of the show, she seemed more of like the normal person that was just trying to get by, and Alana was more of the wild card. Now she has her own like different types of quirks, and you know, whether it's her being hopped up on adrenaline, you know, at a fancy dinner, hopped up on the table carrying Alana to the hospital, or whether it's her singing Edge of Glory naked when her roommate's boyfriend is finally gone. Like, she has a lot of interesting things to her. So I think comparing the two can actually be a nice summary of like how what character evolution can do to either help or hurt a character.
I agree. And so with kind of that evolution, both of these shows lost their straight person. So do you think that has had any effect on the life of the show and the relationships?
Yeah, see, it's interesting because I'd say in Broad City, I think the straight man perspective kind of went more external. Now it's less about Abby and the city of New York reacting to Alana as much now as it is now the city of New York reacting to Abby and Alana as a pair almost. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that spread a lot more opportunities for the writers in general, just because they'll be able to say like, now they don't have to, they're not written into a corner of like, okay, we want something crazy to happen, but we don't want Alana to be in the scene. How can we do this? So they're able to say like, okay, Abby can do some crazy stuff now. And I think they've been able to use pieces of fuel like her obsession with Jeremy and this like weird obsession to be an artist, but still be like a trainer at the gym. Like, I think they've been able to use those plot points as ways to make Abby more of a crazy person. On Girls, they've been able to mix it up a little more. I would say probably the biggest like straight men on the show are Adam and Ray. I feel like there have both been moments, specifically in the past like few episodes, where like the girls have been talking to them and they're like, you're crazy.
Yes.
Like, what is wrong with you? But then they have their own quirks as well. This past episode we saw Ray be driven insane over cars at the intersection outside his window, and we've seen Adam has now adopted Britta into his life. So these characters are not necessarily filling the normal person roles, but it's interesting that like Lena Dunham and the other writers of Girls have kind of made these people flow in and out seamlessly into these roles, whereas Broad City seems to be more like, if you know the two of them are out, if you know Abby and Alana are out in a scene, you know there's gonna be normal people for them to interact with.
Yeah, I completely agree. I also think that particularly in Broad City, the role Lincoln comes in as a straight man all the time. And you can tell he has comments here and there that he's very wacky, and he's Alana's boyfriend. So he obviously has some craziness to him. But in the episode where Abby got her wisdom teeth taken out, they call him and he's like, he comes over and takes care of her and very much fills that role of being the normal person in the situation.
Yeah. And the thing about it too is that like, he's a normal person, but I mean, we can go on and on about Hannibal Buress's performance. It's just so unique because he's so deadpan. And I think one of the many things I love about the Alana Lincoln relationship is just how kind of dynamically different they are in terms of delivery. You know, Alana is kind of all over the place and she's a little spastic in terms of like her thinking and her behaviors and her movements, whereas Lincoln is very methodical. You know, he's a little more chilled out, he's a little slower, but for some reason they fit together. And I think one of the things that Broad City has done really nicely is actually like push forward with that relationship. You know, I'd say the first half of season one maybe is, you know, Alana was kind of sleeping around a little bit. And while we did get some fun scenes with that, in particular the one episode where she dated the perfect guy, but it turns out that he's horrible at improv, mm-hmm. and that kind of screws with everything. I still love the pairing, and I love that the show has kind of serialized that component and has kind of made that a thing, just because I think they realized how great Hannibal Buress is and they wanted to kind of bring him in any capacity.
Right. I think that anything they can do to keep Hannibal Buress on the show, they should be doing, because his career is taking off and he is a real dream on the show. I find him so funny and such a great narrator isn't the right word, but context for a lot of the stuff that's going on, that they're not living in sort of some wacky world. Like this is regular New York City. There are regular professional adult humans there. And he kind of grounds it, I mm-hmm. guess.
So actually, this segues perfectly into my next point, because I would love to talk about the men in these female centric shows, because I feel like when we see the perspective switched, oftentimes when it's the male centric movies or the male centric TV shows, the female characters are often not written very well. They're very one dimensional. I mean, it goes to show that Cecily Strong has made a Week in Update character out of the one dimensional female that you find in a male driven comedy. It's kind of become a stereotype at this point. But I feel like in both shows, with both the character of Lincoln and I would say the main male character of Adam on Girls, I love both of these characters so much. And Adam Driver is such an enigma. Mm-hmm. I was trying to like conceptualize my feelings about like what do I love about Adam Driver, but for some reason like his performance at Adam and the character is just so interesting to me. It's because he's so volatile yet caring. He's like a ticking time bomb. I love the character personally. But I'm still not sure why. Taylor, what are your thoughts on Adam? And maybe we can kind of widen this discussion to more thoughts about the men on these shows in general.
Yeah, I am right there with you. I am a huge Adam fan. I think he is so interesting and definitely just as flawed as everyone else on the show, if not more. And when we meet him, he wants to be a carpenter, and then he's going to be an actor, and he's all over the place. And really, we don't actually know that much about him. I know that last season we brought in his sister, mm-hmm. who was gave a little bit of information as to who Adam was and used to be. But really, he's just sort of this floating figure in the background of Hannah's life, and who I think was just so amazing that they kept giving him more to do, more to do, more to do. And he became probably one of, if not the strongest performers on the show. And I think it's almost that kind of indescribable quality that makes me love him. That's probably how Hannah feels. There's just no other actor like that that could do this part in the same way. And he actually reminds me of like, sometimes my friends will have a boyfriend that's just so weird. And so it comes out of nowhere and you never know what they're doing. You don't know anything about them. And that's really seems like what Adam is to me.
What do you think about some of the other male characters on there? I mean, obviously we have Ray. Ray is kind of a mainstay, but for the first season we had Charlie for a little bit. We've had Desi, obviously. I know I'm not going to group them all together necessarily, but do you have any other opinions about these other male characters?
In particular, I think Elijah is probably.
Oh, yeah. Elijah. I totally forgot to mention him.
Yeah.
I pulled in Nadia and I thought he was one of the girls.
One of the girls. Yeah, those other guys, especially, yeah, the various boyfriends that come and go, with the exception of Ray, I think they're all good, and all the actors are really great and bring this like perfect brand of like narcissism and like crazy to the show. Elijah, I think, is interesting because I honestly am not sure that they've done everything that they could do with Elijah. And I almost think he's been too relegated to like a gay best friend kind of role. And I've feeling maybe, you know, Hannah taking off back to New York and leaving him in Iowa might make him a little more interesting. But I mean, Andrew Rannells is like one of the best. So to have him on the show is such a gift, and I hope they continue to give him a lot to do.
Yeah, Andrew Rannells, that role, I will admit, I don't think it's the best written role. I might say, I'm not speaking from the gay perspective, but I feel like parts of it might be a little offensive in terms of like the, you know, the snap, 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 hey type of personification of the homosexual. But I think Andrew Rannells sells that part, and he really brings a lot of charm to it, especially, you know, watching these past couple of episodes with him, like, you know, when Elijah's talking about how he like is taking pictures and he realized that he wanted to take pictures because he was getting so good at taking selfies that he needed a challenge, and he realized, why, what if I just turn the camera around? Is like, again, we talked about how Zasha Mamet could only sell a certain line as Shoshana. Mm-hmm. I feel like only Andrew Rannells could sell that line as Elijah.
Yes.
And he's had a really interesting role as well, too, because, like, you know, he started off as kind of like a sitcom-y type of joke in the first season where, like, he reunites with Hannah, and then, Hannah realizes the last boyfriend that she had before Adam turned out to be gay, and, you know, that whole cliche. But then there's that whole interesting dynamic in season two where, you know, he sleeps with Marnie that one night. And I will not say good or bad. I will say interesting, because it's a yet another one of those season two experiments that might not have panned out completely, but, you know, it seems like we see him like pop up from place to place. We don't know where he lives. He lived with Hannah for a while, but he's able to, like, you know, he was found at that beach house in that famous episode last season. He just moved out to Iowa this season. Like, he's like the wandering magical gay that he's able to just like appear whenever the plot seems convenient. But that being said, Andrew Rannells completely sells it, and I think that's one of the reasons, like a Hannibal Buress, why they wanted to keep bringing him back, is just because they loved him doing the role so much.
Right, and like I said earlier, I think that's probably a constraint of having so few, like such a short amount of time to produce a show, and then not only an ensemble cast, but a very, very talented ensemble cast. You can't do every single person justice, and I think Elijah's a character that really gets the short end of that stick.
Mm-hmm. Were you happy to that Charlie ended up leaving after the second season? I was not a big Charlie fan. Charlie seemed a little blasé to me.
Yeah, I agree, but I probably feel similarly about Desi. So it's really six of one, half dozen of the other with me for Charlie versus Desi.
Desi seems at least more of a scumbag. Like, this guy seems like such, considering that we just ended the last episode with him, you know, coming to Mari's apartment weeping, saying that he did it. He broke up with his girlfriend, played by Natalie Morales, who's now on Parks and Rec. Yeah, so again,
everybody's
it's all,
girlfriend.
Exactly. Everybody's spurned lover, basically.
Yep.
It all connects. But then it turns out, like, we learn throughout the scene that really she broke up with him, but he doesn't want to admit it. Like, he is just like the lowest of the low. I think someone on the AV Club called him like one of the most like the most disgusting character the show has ever had. I don't know if I would go that far, but like, it's still like, I think he has at least some despicable elements to that. Charlie just seemed boring to me. Right. I wasn't as into like the second season stuff of like, oh, Charlie's back, but he has a girlfriend. I never understood like the whole like Charlie left and then he came back and then he left again. I wasn't watching the show at the time, so I don't know if the actor just decided to.
That's my understanding. Yeah, there was weird stuff going on with that actor.
Okay, that makes sense to be like, oh, well, you know, it's like a Richie Cunningham, or not Richie Cunningham's brother on Happy Days. Like, oh, he went up the stairs and he never came back again. Like, that seemed like what they did with Charlie. And I also have like a similar fascination with Adam. I have a very similar fascination with Ray as well. Ray is like, I don't know. The way he's written is so interesting because he's supposed to be what, like, I don't know, maybe 10 years older, if that, but he still doesn't talk the way people his age talk. So like, it seems like he's always writing a dissertation or something, like, or like he's in like a Tom Stoppard play. Like, it's so such an interesting way of writing, and again, only this actor can sell it. But I mean, like, I can't even, I probably have like a list of Ray quotes I could pull out of somewhere, but it's been so weird. I don't know. Are you more of a shipper of him and I keep saying Sasha, him and Shoshana? Shosh, or him and Marnie?
I think I'm a Ray and Shosh shipper. I get him and Marnie on some level, but I think that he really loves Shosh. So that's kind of why I like them together. I liked their scene together in the latest episode.
Yeah, I just love the fact that, like, Ray has this perspective where, like, no matter who he's sleeping with, he'll always lecture them afterwards. Like, I feel like that was the big component of his relationship with Marnie, was that, like, they'd sleep together and then he'd, like, advise her to be like, go be a singer, do what you want to do. Like, it's such a... Because they called him Old Man Ray to begin with. And really, in the beginning, he only functioned as like a friend of Charlie. And he was very much on the peripherals. But then once Charlie left the picture, he got more brought to the forefront. But he does kind of seem like this like sage old man that will like just give out these random bits of advice to these people along the way. Of course, after he sleeps with them.
Right. And he probably is the most messed up character on the show in such a charming way, because he is, I think he's supposed to be in his mid 30s. He's sleeping with 20 year olds and only mid last season, I think, like, starts to actually hold down a job with the cafe. And I must say, did he go to grad school and then quit? Or he has
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. All over the place. And is only just getting his life together. And even that is debatable, but he's so charming. And I think that those people, I always get very enamored with those people that are just so, so smart and like artists. But really, it's like, is he saying anything that interesting?
Exactly. He seems like more type of person that will like spout off, you know, 500 words when you can really only derive the meaning from like three of them, you know?
Yes.
He can just say, I am angry. He doesn't need to knock on people's windows to talk about how they're ruining his noise economy or anything like that. Now, there's one of the main characters that we haven't really touched on yet, and it's Jessa. And I guess I subconsciously did this for a reason, because Taylor, I honestly do not know what it is, but for some reason, I cannot stand Jessa.
Oh my gosh. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what it is, because, like, granted, as we talked about before, these characters are not necessarily the most likable, but for some reason I can excuse something Hannah does or something Marnie does or something Shosh does. Maybe the thing for me with Jessa is because she's so self-centered, as they all are, but she's also very destructive as well. Like, I feel like she has this wanton attitude, external attitude almost, where like she'll do whatever she wants. And I think that bluntness definitely leads to some humorous moments, like we saw in the last episode when she's listening to Marnie's music and she, you know, she kind of compares it to that song that you hate to listen to at first, but then you listen to it on the radio enough that eventually you'll like it. But there's just like so many things that she's done between, like, you know, sleeping with the husband of the family she was babysitting for, or that one episode where her and Hannah went out to her family's house and then she like ended up leaving Hannah in her family's house, just like took off for a while and then went to rehab and then got kicked out of rehab. Like, there's been a weird trajectory for this character, but I just can't fathom myself to enjoy the scenes that she's in.
I almost think of her as more of a caricature than any of the others, because if you start making this laundry list, like, of all the crazy things that she's done, like, I think we could almost transfer Jessa over to Broad City. And it's like, oh, she got married and she did this crazy thing. And I would say she is very similar to Alana on Broad City, except that what Alana is doing ultimately, they kind of mitigate the consequences and they don't really have to, they don't hurt anyone other than themselves. Or Alana doesn't hurt anyone other than herself with her crazy hijinks. And Jessa deliberately destroys the relationships again and again and again. And it's, Yeah, to me, Jessa is a hard character to get a read on. The other three, I can be like, oh, okay, I see parts of myself or people I know in these characters. Jessa, to me, is, if there are people out there like Jessa, I don't know them. She seems much more fictional than the other three.
Yeah, if you know people like Jessa, you've probably incarcerated them already.
Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I totally forgot that she was married to Chris O'Dowd. I forgot that was a season one type of thing. I guess that gets me started on another thing about the guest stars. And I feel like, you know, since Girls has had more seasons, they've obviously used them more plentifully. But I feel like both shows has a really interesting mix of guest stars. And I'll use guest stars as a liberal term, because they're obviously less famous guest stars on Broad City, Amy Poehler notwithstanding. But I guess they're more guest stars to me just because, you know, I'm in New York. I'm actually pretty kind of entrenched in the UCB community, taking classes. I'm on a team with people who have taken classes at UCB. So when I see people like Nicole Drespel, who plays Ilana's coworker that sits right next to her and absolutely hates her, like that's a teacher at UCB. Yeah. Or like Anthony Antamanik, who played the adult store clerk in the most recent episode. He's a teacher at UCB as well. Or Chris Gethard, who plays Ilana's boss. I think he's a little more famous. You know, he has his own show, and there's he's been on The Office and such. But it's interesting how, like, I think one of the main complaints, as you talked about, from Girls to begin with, it was everyone kind of bringing in their friends to do this show. But Broad City is kind of the same as well. You know, it seems like there's a lot of UCB people that seem to come and go, to the point of where Amy Poehler, who really brought this show to the light as a show on Comedy Central, appeared in the season finale.
Right. And on both shows, I would say, for the most part, it's a real joy to see the guest stars that they bring in. Definitely, I'm not as entrenched in the UCB community as you are, but when people pop up whose names I've heard, it seems it's really exciting. And Jason Mantzoukas and people like that
Jason Mantzoukas and Badger play those two guys that tried to have like the four way with them, or have them look at each other while they're, or try to like have sex in the same room. I think that's what it was.
Yeah. So people, it's like kind of the comedy people that pop up, and or like more new school comedy people maybe. And then on Girls, you see a lot more maybe established actors or people that Colin Quinn did a guest.
Patti LuPone.
Right. Yeah. You see people maybe that aren't as hot right now, but are still very respected.
How dare you, Taylor? Patti LuPone will always be hot.
Yeah, fair enough.
We got a hot LuPone going on. We're in the year of the hot LuPone.
Hot LuPone.
I agree. Yeah, it definitely seems like the guest stars in Girls are more entrenched in terms of like pulling in random people. And I think, you know, from what I heard with Broad City, I think they're starting to do the same. I don't think we've seen too much of it. Actually, I mean, like this past episode, we saw Susie Essman from Curb Your Enthusiasm play Ilana's mother, but we also saw Bob Balaban, who's been in a number of things. The thing I most know him for was from Waiting for Guffman. He plays the conductor or the musical director, but he's been doing a bunch of stuff. So they've been slowly bringing people in, but they might go the route of Girls. We might see some more LuPone in Broad City.
Yeah, I can't complain about that, I guess.
No, you can never get enough LuPone.
But they're on every show.
Exactly. So there's one moment that I wanted to talk about before we start finishing up that I thought was so interesting in Girls. And it was a couple of episodes ago when it was Hannah's, I guess it was like her first day of grad school. And there was this one scene where, you know, her class is, you know, everyone sits around a table and someone reads the story and then they kind of offer their critiques. And Hannah reads her story, and all the critiques that the class gives, aside from being, you know, that come off as very entitled, you know, artsy fartsy opinions, there's surprisingly reminiscent of a lot of the criticisms of both Girls and Lena Dunham's writing. She came out with a book, I think it was a series of personal essays this past summer, and there were a lot of similar complaints as we also brought up on this podcast of like, you know, it seems like she's speaking for like the, I don't want to hear this like spoiled rich girl talk about her problems. It seems too sexually explicit, like 50 Shades of Grey. I really enjoyed the scene because it's, you know, when a show goes meta, it's always a fine line to trace. But I enjoyed that Dunham had an opportunity to kind of take a dig at her critics. I don't know, Taylor, were you able to catch that? What did you think of that?
Yes, I agree. And I think watching it in tandem with the scene from this past episode, which basically like in the, so there were three episodes, the one you mentioned, then the second one, she like tears them all apart and she basically undermines their ability to criticize her. And then in the third episode, she tries to apologize, but in that apology just comes off as defensive and insults them more on some level, and then ultimately leaves the program. So looking at it from that arc is really interesting, because I think that Lena Dunham probably went through those responses to criticism. And I think that most people go through kind of that stages of grief type reaction to criticism, that you want to defend yourself and you want to undermine your critics and that sort of thing. But it's interesting to see, like, did she take criticism from that was lodged right at her and then just sort of repackage it in a way that she was able to make fun of it? Because I don't know if at the end Hannah won.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I don't think she did whatsoever.
Right. So I think that these critics kind of won their battle, that they were able to, on some level, bully her into leaving the program. At least that's sort of how she saw it. I did think the interesting part, or another interesting part about it, was the critics weren't particularly, or the other grad students who were critiquing Hannah's work weren't particularly well-spoken in what they were lodging against her. So their points were very flawed or circular or didn't really make a lot of sense. So I was like, is this a dig? Is she saying, like, to her critics that what you're saying doesn't make sense? So I think it was a very interesting way to handle it. And if it was meant to be a message, I'm not sure if I understood it.
Yeah, the funny thing about it is I think Dunham is also very cognizant that her viewpoint is her own viewpoint, if that makes sense. Like, going back to your thoughts about the whole takedown she does in episode 3, where she basically points to each one of her classmates and is like, specifically like the golden child of the class, she says, like, well, you write about all this urban stuff, but you really haven't been on the street. And so I think the problem with Hannah's character that she kind of realizes in this Iowa grad school is that, like, her style is associated with, like, her experiences. She could only really write about what it's like to be in a girl in her 20s living in New York, trying to be a writer, suffering from mild OCD when it's convenient to the plot, and you know, living with her friends and all those types of things. Whereas, like, other writers do not necessarily always write from their own perspective. You know, I think it's a rule in general to say write what you know. But I wouldn't necessarily fault these other grad students to write from perspectives that they might not necessarily be living. But in Hannah's brain, that's like a no-no. You know, like, right. You're not a good writer unless you're writing about things that have actually happened to you. So it's weird, because that scene is kind of a takedown of her critics. But at the same time, I mean, I just talked about it. I do not think Hannah won. And I think that, like, the fact that when they brought up her apology letter that she puts into everyone's cubby, is that, like, it really wasn't an apology. It was basically her saying, like, oh, I'm sorry, you all suck, which is, like, not really an apology at all. It's a very passive aggressive apology. What did you, I guess, since we've now wrapped on the Iowa arc in general, do you have any thoughts about it? Since this really was the first time we had taken someone out of New York for an extended period of time, did you like it? Were you irked by it? Did you want to see Hannah back with everyone else?
It didn't bother me. I think the fact that this was the fourth season, it felt like something like that was needed. We might as well kind of try something new and make sure that everyone knows this show isn't self-contained. It's very character-driven. It doesn't need to be everyone being in Brooklyn, whatever Brooklyn neighborhood they live in. I'm not a New Yorker. And and how that context doesn't necessarily inform who these characters are. It just is a backdrop. So I think that's very interesting. It didn't surprise me that it took exactly 4 episodes for her to be in and out of Iowa. I saw that coming a mile away, but yeah, it didn't bother me. What did you think of it?
I definitely I was fine with it as well. I think it might have been nice, and I think some of the show's best episodes were episodes that took them out of their environment. One big example is the beach house episode, which I know Entertainment Weekly in particular has gone on to say it was they called it the best episode the show's ever done. And it's almost like an external version of a bottle episode where like the characters were kind of forced to confront each other in small situations, culminating in that one scene where they all just kind of drunkenly yelled at each other about things they've been bottling up inside, pun unintentional there. I would say that, it was a cool concept. I guess I'll cover it in the season two category of like, I think it was a bold attempt. I'm not sure how well it worked out. Part of me wishes that we could have had a little bit more of the other Iowa writers characters fleshed out. I feel like they were kind of a little over the top and a little bit of like a brick wall. Like you couldn't really differentiate one character from another. They were all snooty, egotistical writers to be that hated Hannah. Like there was nothing to differentiate the characters. And I feel like something that Dunham was able to do in the past is like really characterize these 1, 2, 3 episode characters so that you got to know them before they ended up getting broken up with or they happened to conveniently leave or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like she didn't really make that attempt to do it. Maybe it's because it was part of the larger meaning of like, these are my critics and this is how I deal with my critics. I loved Elijah in Iowa. I think that was always mm-hmm. fun. And I love the fact that like Elijah would do all these criminal things. Like, you know, he's publishing a website of all these people that he took pictures of, but he didn't have them sign a waiver because they won't know what a waiver is because they're in Iowa. Like, I enjoyed those types of things. Maybe we'll see more Elijah in Iowa. We don't know, but I guess I'll be happy to see her back, especially with the falling out that's seeming to occur between her and Adam, or at least the confusion. And, you know, I'm sure Marnie will be happy to have her back because she even complained as of last episode how she really doesn't get along with Shoshana or Jessa at all.
Right. She definitely is the glue that kept everyone together on the show. So I think we are ready for a lot of interesting stuff to happen in the next, 6 episodes or 8 episodes that we have left.
Absolutely. Do you have any final thoughts on girls and or Broad City? I guess I'll pose a rather large question to you. Mm-hmm. What do you think is like the, I'll use the big word here, what do you think is the importance of these two shows nowadays? If we're speaking to a crowd of people who have never watched either show before or who have stopped watching Girls but want to get back into it, what would you like to say to them to say you need to be watching both of these shows?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if you're someone like me who I am 25, I do love comedy, I would love to be some sort of more professional comedian comedy writer, both of these shows are two shows that young women were able to produce off the ground with I don't want to say very little help, because they had very powerful people notice them, but who worked really hard and were able to put together a creative vision and make shows that are more or less fictional versions of the things that they know and experience. And I think that for me, that's probably a lot of why I like both of these shows. So if you're not a person that relates inherently to a show about 25-year-olds living in a city, then there are opportunities to create shows that relate to your life, I guess. And not to make this a call to action for aspiring writers, but on some level, yeah, I think that we're in a very exciting time that something like Broad City could be a relatively small web series and it gets blown up to being a show that's been renewed for a third season on a cable network. And we have Lena Dunham, who's a much more academic, creative writer, can produce the show that she's always wanted to produce. So it's kind of a interesting, hopeful message that like, if you kind of get working and start creating something that's of value, then it can be on TV. I guess.
Yeah, I know. I would definitely agree with that. And I would add on top of that, that if you want some of the most accurate representation of not only female friendships, but friendships in general, I would say look towards these two shows, because they reach across a weird spectrum of feelings to the point of where, you know, Alana has slightly homosexual feelings towards Abby. Like they go through the spectrum of like they hate each other, but they love certain quirks about each other, but they work well together, but they don't work well together in this regard. And I think one of the things I love about both shows is that like they really are true to these relationships. These are not like cobbled together writings of people quipping back and forth at each other. You know, you're not necessarily going to find that in either one of these shows, but what you are going to find is, it's going to be a cheesy word, but you're going to find heart. You know, you're going to find, granted, these characters might not be the most realistic, but you're going to find realistic friendships and realistic relationships. And at the end of the day, when you're looking into characters that you want to watch, those are the things that I'm looking for, are meaningful relationships and enjoyable relationships. And I feel like whether they're volatile relationships or whether they're blooming relationships, they're really fun relationships to look at.
I agree. And not to continue, your point was very lovely and I would have loved to end it on it, besides the fact that I want to make one more point. if you've been turned off to either Broad City or Girls, particularly Girls, because the characters are unlikable, I would definitely suggest giving it a second chance and kind of realize that there is interesting storytelling behind unlikable characters. And exactly what you kind of just said, that it might not be realistic in the sense that it's not like everyone, but it's probably like a lot of unlikable people out there. Yep. So kind of hearing the stories of people you might not normally be interested in their story, it's not totally a waste of your time.
All right, if we converted one person to watch Girls again, I think we've done our job.
We've done it. They should. Our checks are in the mail, I hope.
So while you're about to mail our checks, or you're binge watching Girls or Broad City, you can always take the time to check out all the other coverage that's going on Post Show Recaps right now. Well, we've just kicked off coverage of Better Call Saul with Rob Cicerino and Antonio Mazzaro, as well as The Walking Dead had its mid-season premiere, Justified is in its final season. Soon we'll have Once Upon a Time, House of Cards. We'll get a little bit of Game of Thrones in there, and before we know it, Taylor, summer's going to be upon us and you'll be back in Orange is the New Black season.
I know, gotta take some time off so I can get my binge on.
Yeah, exactly. So take a load off, kick your feet off, dance along to some music that Elijah's weird choreographer friend did for you, and enjoy. If you guys want to subscribe to Post Show Recaps in general to hear more little discussions like this, some more one-time coverage, subscribe at postshowrecaps.com/iTunes. You can also follow each of us on Twitter. Taylor is at Taylor Cotter, correct?
Yes.
Great. At Taylor Cotter, and I am at a Mike Bloom type. We would love any and all feedback from this. This has been a lot of fun to talk about these shows with you, and I loved talking about the general, you know, like female comedy microcosm in general, and I liked how we got all significant and stuff and acted on that outer level. So if you guys want to see more stuff like this, let us know. And if you made it to the end of the show, let's go with hashtag Hot Lapone. You want to go with that, Taylor?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Hot Lapone. All right, so hashtag Hot Lapone if you made it this far. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. Taylor, thank you so much for coming on. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Mike. Anytime.
All right, guys. Again, hashtag Hot Lapone if you made it very far, and we will talk to you again soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.